McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. It is 9 o'clock. It is June 27th, Monday, right here on Jocks 94.5. Listen online, jocksfm.com. If you missed either Mike Farrell or Paul Feinbaum, go grab those interviews in the podcast. JocksFM.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get yours. You can obviously catch up there. Some MLB action yesterday in the Boogie Down after being no hit on Saturday. The bats bounced back in a big way for the Yankees. This is how it ended against the Astros.
The 0-1. That one's drilled deep to left field. Going back, Diaz looking up. See ya! A walk-off three-run home run for Judge. And the Yankees win it. The Yankees go from no hit to no way is this happening again. A dramatic come-from-behind victory. And the Yankees split four with the Astros.
Did you see the Judge's arbitration deal? How weird that whole thing went down this weekend?
Yeah, it was.
We're going to pay you 19. I want 21. Fine, let's meet in the middle and play 20. Are you ready to play this afternoon? It's like, well, all right, hang on. What kind of negotiation was that? Like, basically, it's like Judge wanted to play because he's clearly chasing a record. And the Yankees said, all right, we want to save $2 million and potentially tick off our best player. It's like, what are we doing? Pay him what he wants. He's Aaron Judge. He might win the MVP. And you're really going to try to nickel and dime as the New York Yankees for a couple $1 million?
28th homer of the year for Judge. Second walk-off homer of his career. 10th walk-off win for the Yankees this year. That's the most in Major League Baseball. Stanton also hit his 17th bomb. But as you mentioned, that arbitration, I see in I take a look at the year that Judge is having, GMAC, and it's got me thinking of Rounders. The only thing I can think of.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
There you go.
Just get it done. Find a way to get it done.
What are you going to what is he going to make, seriously?
Oh. There are some people that believe that there are a couple other teams that are realistically in the mix. I don't. They'll back up the Brinks truck. And
100%. Well, that's what I can't figure out. It's like, stop it. You're not the Tampa Bay Rays, okay? You're not the Minnesota Twins, okay? You're not the Baltimore Orioles. Like, you're the freaking New York Yankees. Go out there and pay the dude what he's worth. This is absurd. It's absurd.
What should they do again, Damian?
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Just get it done.
Seriously.
Get it done. I think it's got a chance to be an all-time contract. Also,
on a scale of one to Mahomes, does he make more of the money on the total contract number than Mahomes?
Yes. Yes, because it's baseball.
No, because Mahomes is 10 years, 450. There's no way he gets 10 years, 450.
Okay.
What did we'll Trout see. Get?
What was that? Trying to think what his money was.
I don't know. I really don't know. Does it matter?
Mike Trout, 12 years, 426.
There you go. There's your indicator. It's a lot of
Trout
years.
Trout got $100 million more than Bryce Harper got.
How much longer was his deal, though? His deal was way longer, correct?
I don't know if it was. I don't know if it's too much longer. What was Trout's deal? 35 and a half a year. Cole's getting 36 a year. That's the wrong Cole getting that, by the way.
Cole Kubelik?
Getting 43.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
What Cole?
Yes, I definitely get 36,000 a year. Yes.
just a rounding error. That's all it was.
That's all it is.
Scherzer's making
that's
what?
All it was 43.3. A year.
Did I ever tell you about the story about the one time I hung out with Max Scherzer?
No, you just told us about Joe Jonas. Enlighten us, brother.
No, this will make you sick.
Was it in a hot tub?
No. Close. We were in Phoenix for the Phoenix Open. Okay. All right. So we used to go every year. Every year the Phoenix Open is like one of my favorite events. I used to always go and have a blast, take the boys out there. It was like one of the one time a year we all got together with my high school friends. We were probably like 22, 23, 24. Fresh out of college, still in the league. Like, just had a great time. Well, one night we're hanging out with Max Scherzer, who for whatever reason was there. I've never met the guy before in my life, like, but obviously you know who he is. And at that point, he was playing for Detroit. And Detroit had offered him, and he was very willing to talk about it, had offered him a 3-year, $75 million contract in which he turned down. He's walking us through this. I'm like, all right, might want to think twice on that one. What's your name, Max Scherzer? Like, all right, you might want to take that. All right, I've never even heard of you, but he's walking us through that whole situation. We might go to a bar. The bar was called Bottled Blonde. It's right there in Old Town Scottsdale. It's a great bar, great, great time. Scherzer is ordering drinks like there's no tomorrow. Everyone in the bar had a free drink courtesy of Max Scherzer. And I'm sitting there, this guy is awesome. I love this guy. This guy could not be cooler. Outside of the fact that he's bragging about turning down $75 million, really like this guy. Well, long story short, Scherzer bails. And guess who's stuck with the tab?
Not one Gregory McElroy.
That would be the kid. And I, for the record, I did not turn down a $75 million contract earlier that day. I was hanging on by a thread in year three in the NFL. And that bill eclipsed $1,000. And I was about to have a heart attack.
Wow.
Max Scherzer. Now, thankfully, my boy stepped up and we split it like seven different ways. But, dude, when you turn down $75 million and are bragging about it, only to stiff everyone else you're right with the check, we got issues. Scherzer's on the list. Permanently on the list. To him, $1,000. What's $1,000 to Max Scherzer?
Nothing. Like, literally, nothing.
Seriously.
Like, one pitch an inning.
One inning?
Like, one, not even full inning. Like, maybe two and a third. Like, one out.
Just a pitch.
Yeah. Like,
one pitch.
One pitch is $1,000. If that. Maybe more.
Literally, still to this day.
There's nothing better than when those contracts are broken down to, like, minute or at bat or pitch or per pass attempt. It's just insane.
Long story short, don't find yourself in the bar.
I had a similar situation. No, I had a similar situation a long time ago. Well, it was a long time ago in Vegas, and there was a place called the V Bar in the Venetian, and it was one of my favorite places just to hang out. It wasn't like light at the Bellagio or Dre's or anything like that. It was kind of a low key spot, standard, but I knew some folks in there, took good care of us, and so I was like, hey, I got a little pre deal set up there, and I was with a group. I got invited by a friend of mine because I was already there, and he was there for a bachelor party. So that's probably where I went wrong to begin with. So yeah, I bring in a bunch of dudes that I really didn't know. And so we all sit down, and you can imagine like 8, 10, 12 guys at this place who is very nice about, you know, ramping up the bottle service, they're taking full advantage. And, you know, things progress, and all of a sudden, everybody's having a good time. And, you know, I'm mid-conversation, and I look over, and the buddy that I knew that I was there with, he said, hey, everybody's gone. And I said, what? Huh? I don't understand. Huh? He's like, no, man, my buddies, they left. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, cool. And then it kind of hit me, and I looked over, and this is a buddy of mine who people listen to the station are familiar with, similar initials as the greatest pass rusher in NFL history. He looks over and he says, yeah, we need to close out. And I was like, oh yeah, we do. And so the bill comes down, and I'll give him credit. I mean, he immediately put his credit card down. He goes, I guess we'll split it. And I was like, at least we're splitting it. I mean, I could have just been me. And he easily could have left with his boys, and he didn't. And he stuck around, and he split it with me. But, yeah, that one was a little steeper than the one you described, and that one hit hard.
But you were asking for it in Vegas.
That was a dagger.
All you gotta do is just go play a couple hands. Go play a couple hands. At least you had a chance to win it back. Like in Scottsdale, I'm stuck. Yeah. There's no way to win it back in Scottsdale. I'm toast.
You just have to hold that in.
Yeah, I gotta drive like 45 minutes to Crooked Stick or whatever the name of the place is out there and win it back on penny slots. Like you had a chance. At least I don't feel sorry for you. Only it could have gotten worse. Like I mean, not everybody wins. Is there anything worse than that though? Like you stiff someone with the tab. That's the worst. All-time worst.
Buying drinks for other people on it.
Yes.
That's, when
you're buying drinks for the bar, Yeah.
Yeah, that's a doozy.
Hey, honey, well, your shots for your group over there. Okay, cool. He's going to get it. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Yeah,
that's bad ball.
Yeah, you got got.
Bad ball.
Especially when they turned down $75 million. You're on the list, Scherzer. I don't care what kind of stuff
speaking
you have.
Speaking of driving around, it doesn't matter if you're winning or losing. There's one place you can always win, G-Mac.
That's right. They always win. That's Bill Smith Buick GMC. It's just right up the road, and right off Highway 65 in Coleman. You can't miss it. It's a short drive. And you're going to go up there. You're going to have a great time sitting down and talking to Andy Cole and Jonathan Yeager. These are just great people. I've really, really enjoyed getting to know them over the last year or so. And I'm sure they'll be able to talk you into one of their new cars on the lot because, my goodness, nobody has more inventory in the Southeast than Bill Smith Buick GMC. Like I said, go check them out right now. Grab yourself a new GMC Sierra 1500 crew cab, four-wheel drive truck, or the Acadia SUV. They're both brand new. They're loaded with options. Both are discounted more than $5,000 off the sticker price. There's no premium markups with Bill Smith, just the best deals in town. If you can't find one on a new car, it's no problem. Go check out the used car superstore. They're going to have a solution for you no matter what your budget is. That's why they're GMC and Buick's Dealer of the Year. It's a short drive up to Coleman to go see my friends, the guys that will take great care of you. So go see them, or you can order online, BillSmithBuickGMC.com. Have it delivered right to your driveway.
We also had a brawl yesterday in Anaheim. The Angels take out the Mariners 2-1. There's just nothing worse than baseball fights. There really isn't.
Why?
It's just like to see the amount of guys that come out of the dugout, come out of the bullpen, run, just to grab guys by the waist and pull them off and right. Act like they want to fight and don't fight and try to get in the way, but don't get in the way. Fake punches being thrown, shoves. They're the absolute worst.
Stop it, dude. Anthony Rendon was out there throwing it with one hand with a cast on his other. Dude is out for the year and throwing punches with one arm. Anthony Rendon's top five player to me now.
That's where he goes.
You're going to go out there with a cast right after your season ends saying, I don't care. I'll put a cast on this other hand. Then you're fighting with one arm with your arm in a sling. I'm on your team forever.
Gangsta.
It's one out of 60 guys that actually doing something. So, yeah, no.
That's called.
Because what gets me, though, is the guys from the bullpen. I'm talking about you have run a whole 6,000 yards just to go out there and just grab somebody. Hey, y'all cut it out.
Those guys are exhausted by the time they get there.
Like, ain't throwing not one punch. Come on, dude.
They're pitchers.
If I'm coming from the bullpen all the way to, you know, handling some business, I'm coming with a Superman punch. Like, I'm bringing it from... If I had to run all this way,
I can see you jumping from second base and like landing on the mound with like this Thor. Hey, it's like a Thor hammer punch. Like,
man, I'm bringing it.
What you should do.
It should be
a sprint start like Goldberg spear when you get there. Is exactly
like
what
somebody
it
misses
be,
some
it's
teeth.
Not.
You guys are way too hard on baseball players. They're barely athletes.
Part of it. The entertaining part, fair more point. Times than not. Are the old assistant coaches, like the hitting instructors and the pitching coaches that come in there, and you can tell they're so freaking bored that they hadn't been doing anything in so long that they just want to go. They're falling down. You usually see them on the ground, and other guys like, oh, help him up. Like Don Zimmer, the one time he runs out there and Pedro
come
just
on,
tosses
dude.
Him.
That was
so
that was funny.
Messed.
That was messed up.
Like, man, he's a blink.
But my point is, Zim wanted to get out there and get some. Like, the dude hasn't seen any action in like 12 years.
That's true.
He can't go hit. He can't play the field. He's not doing anything. So he's just like, oh, we're clearing the benches. Like, there were two assistant coaches I saw for the Angels yesterday. They were on the ground at different points in time. I rewound that thing 100 times trying to find something good. And the only thing I could find was the dude with long blonde hair that looked like
fixing himself
the Angels,
up.
Who's like fixing his hair before he actually pretends like he's going to fight. That was the best thing I could find in the whole deal. There's two assistant coaches for the Angels that are on the ground rolling around because they tried to get into it but couldn't because they're so old and they fell down and didn't really know how to manage themselves. So, yeah, they're always bad. Weird day in Atlanta yesterday as Freddie Freeman goes 2-for-5. Craig Kimbrell gets the win, but the Braves lost. I mean, you talk about just sort of a backwards day in Atlanta. They fall to 42-32 on the season. Dodgers get the win 45-26.
Oops.
What were your thoughts on the Freddie Freeman Love Fest over the weekend, G-Mac?
Oh, my gosh. Dude, I don't understand why people do what they do. I just, for the life of me, I don't understand this. Like, why are we in a world now where we just celebrate guys that leave? Like, I'm sorry. Like, if I were an Atlanta sports fan, I would appreciate what Freddie Freeman did, but I would loathe him every second of his career until he retires, in which I can love him again. Like, I just don't understand it. Like, explain to me that. Like, same thing at these guys that jump in the transfer portal. Like, oh, man, go get yours. Go get your bread. Go get your bag. Go get all this. No. How about you go kick rocks, and we're going to kick your butt next year? I just don't understand this. Like, why do we celebrate guys that that leave where you're at? Like, I wanted Freddie to get booed, maliciously booed, every single moment. Because if I were an Atlanta fan, I would be so mad at Freddie Freeman for going to our rival. Like, how can you be okay with that?
I mean, I'm the same way. I thought it was. I don't know if I've seen anything like what I saw this weekend. That was to the extent that I had never seen.
He's such a great brave.
800-239-9569 if you want to get in. Tweet in at Mac and Cube. And here's the thing. It's so selective because it's not every guy. Not every team celebrates every guy that leaves. That does not happen. It's not a real thing. But when he's a guy that was nice and a guy that everybody liked and was a fan favorite, then yeah, that's the way it's going to go. I'm not mad at Braves fans for appreciating him, for giving him a standing ovation. You know, he got his World Series ring. Some of the moments were cool, but it felt excessive this weekend in particular, and it felt like a lot. But hey, people root for different things and different people at different times. It's like you're saying about the portal. Most fans get mad about a guy when he leaves in the portal, but most of their teammates are posting up, you know, good luck, go get yours.
We're proud of you.
Hope you do.
Thanks for leaving us.
Damn, you left me. I mean, it's different, man. Different times, absolutely. But Dodgers get that win yesterday. Also, a big baseball win that needs to be celebrated. Ole Miss 4-2 over Oklahoma yesterday. 8 hits for Oklahoma in that game yesterday. In the College World Series final, fewest since 2003, since the new format was put in place. Cade Horton goes 13 strikeouts and 7 in the innings, just not enough. Jacob Gonzalez, the hero offensively for Ole Miss yesterday, he goes 3-for-4, big home run, game-tying single in the 8th. He was 3-of-22 in their first 5 games, comes through big. Most outstanding player, Dylan DeLucia, no surprise, 2-0, 17 strikeouts in 16 2/3 inning. Greg, he did not walk a batter. His ERA .54 for Ole Miss yesterday. There were 28 home runs in the entire College World Series. That's tied for the most ever. First baseball national championship for Ole Miss. 7th different SEC team to win the College World Series. 3rd straight College World Series win for the SEC. First conference to have 3 straight winners from 3 different teams in the same conference. The SEC pulls that off. It had never been done before. 27 days ago, Mike Bianco was out. He was done. It was over. Based on folks I've spoken to, and I think Paul sort of backed that up when we talked to him earlier in the show today. He said he had basically been told the same. He was done. Oh, no, this is if they would not have made the postseason. He was done. I'm not talking about in the middle of the season. I'm talking about right before the postseason. If they didn't get in, he was out. He was going to go to his office and pack his stuff, and the dude is going to middle finger that administration with a ring on it and brings home. I mean, this thing is, it's going to be Bianco Stadium at Swayze Field now, and they're about to fire the guy. It's just an incredible run for him to be able to get in the postseason. Obviously, you saw the transfer portal work with DeLucia, having some older guys that stuck around and came back to play, helped them tremendously, but what a run. I mean, you go back and look at Elko's tweet, don't let the Rebs get hot. They got hot. They stayed hot through the College World Series, and the SEC has now won 8 of 13 baseball national championships. I'll just throw this out there for you real quick. If you want to go with just kind of, you know, what the SEC has done here recently, and just like the dominance of sports, the SEC's won 8 of 13 in baseball, 11 of 15 in football, 3 of 10 in softball, 3 of 16 in basketball, and 10 of 18 in gymnastics. That's just throwing that out there for SEC national championships and what's happened. But an impressive run, an impressive win yesterday for the Rebs.
Really, really good. And just another example. Actually, they're really not that dissimilar. As you dive a little deeper into it, they're really not that dissimilar to what the Braves did at the midway point last year. They just got hot, right? Just something got figured out. They got hot. They were playing as if they had nothing to lose. They were really playing for their lives the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season. And sure enough, they find themselves in Omaha. Bats are on fire. And then they get into a critical win or go home situation where their ace throws an absolute gem. And then next thing you know, they carry all that extra momentum, both offensively and defensively, into the championship series. It was just a perfect storm. And it was just what's really cool about baseball is that you can find yourselves and get hot at the right time, only to fast forward a few weeks later and potentially win the whole dang thing. So if you look at the parallels to Ole Miss's baseball team and the parallels to the Atlanta Braves of last year are awfully similar. So it's pretty neat, man. Couldn't be happier for Ole Miss. Couldn't be happier for the state of Mississippi. I will admit this, I really don't like the Hail State Ole Miss like graphics where they're on there together and like, oh my goodness, what a championship for the state of Mississippi back to back. I don't like that. I'm not on board with that.
I don't think we split that up after 10. I don't think there was a split state of Alabama, like no. One crimson, one orange.
No, I can promise you, like, that ain't going to happen. Like, for them to kind of tie Mississippi State's championship onto this year's Ole Miss championship, to me, is wrong. But I acknowledge that it means so much in that state that it is going to be celebrated the last 2 years, obviously, by their respective fan bases. For quite some time. So pretty exciting stuff. And it was definitely the team I was rooting for, of course. Just happy for Mike Bianco and all the wonderful people of Oxford, Mississippi.
One of the great guys in all of college athletics. One of the great coaches. Just always a pleasure to talk to be around. And just knowing the situation he was in, you love to see that he was able to get that win. And I agree with you. It's you know, you hate it for Mississippi State, but you got yours. You won it. You celebrated it. You had a year of it. And now this is Ole Miss's title. They deserve to have it. They deserve the conversation. And I go back to, you know, I did the Auburn spring game with Richard Cross, and he does a radio show in the state of Mississippi, and we were just kind of talking before the game, just hanging out a little bit, and he's like, "How much you guys talk college baseball on your show with McElroy?" And I said, "You know, we occasionally get it in. We try to squeeze it in. We talk about it. It's definitely nowhere near what we talk about with college football." And I said, "What about you?" He said, "Every single day." I was like, "What?" He goes, "Oh, man, we got people calling in about college baseball every day."
That's crazy.
September, October, November, doesn't matter. Every day. And I was like, and I'm watching that game. That's all I could think about yesterday. Like, now I get it. Now I see it. I mean, that thing did not sound like Swayze Field North. That sounded like Vaught Hemingway North. I mean, that place was loud with Ole Miss fans, those two championship series games. It was packed. They showed out. Props to Ole Miss fans for what they did and the environment that they created for their team in Omaha. It was beyond impressive. And if you take, this is what's pretty cool too, and I'm not just going with the SEC here, because obviously we love the SEC, we talk about it a lot, but if you take the cluster of states, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, and Tennessee, all neighbor one another, you just take those states, 24 national titles in football and baseball since 2006, just in those states. And if I would have included North Carolina in basketball, it would have been knocking on the door at 30. Just nuts. Like, people wonder why this conference is so successful. It's where the best athletes are. It's where the best sports are. It's where it means the most. And that's just, nobody can escape that. That's the reality of where we are and what it is. Speaking of college football, we have a question into the show about this upcoming season that I believe is very intriguing. And I want to get Damien and Greg's thoughts on. We'll compare two teams' schedules and what we think they're capable of this upcoming season. And we'll do it next on McElroy and Kublik in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kublik in the morning as we continue to move on at 9:29 a.m. Monday, June 27th, right here on Jocks 94.5.
And it's a good day to holler at our friends at Crocker Moving Services, because Crocker Moving Services, they took great care of me. They took great care of my family. Just used them a couple weeks ago. Man, had a tremendous experience, because they are a local company owned by an Iraq War veteran, Eric Crocker, and he believes in hiring movers that you can trust. Jason and Evan came out to my house. They took care of everything. It was so easy. They were so efficient. They didn't even stop for lunch. They just wanted to keep working. I said, y'all, please take a couple minutes. Thank you so much for how hard you're working, man. But that's what you can expect when you rely on Crocker Moving Services. All of the people that will be working for them are drug tested and background checked so that you know you're going to get the best service to the most dependable people in the moving industry. Go online, get a free quote, CrockerMovingServices.com. That's CrockerMovingServices.com. Support your veterans by choosing Crocker Moving Services for your next move.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and give you guys a heads up. Damian G. Mac, both of you, if you want to get into the show here for the rest of the way, 800-239-9569, 800-239-WJOX. Going to compare two college football teams. Connor Hayjack tweets in, who has the most impressive season in football, Utah or Tennessee? Strength of schedule plays a role. So you guys go ahead and get those two schedules up. Get prepared. I'm going to run through another tweet that we had into the show. I talked earlier about how I love when we get those breakdowns of pay per moment for these insane contracts. Gabriel McDaniel sent us a graphic of one. I appreciate Gabriel sending that in. He said, here you go, fellas. LOL, insane. Hashtag Scherzer the stiff.
I'm glad that everybody. That's the next time anyone sees Scherzer at the bar, go load up his tab.
It's
go do it.
This is for McElroy, Max. Here you go, Damian. You talked about it. I love when we get this. All right, Scherzer this year, $3.6 million per month.
Oh,
per month.
$3.6 million a month.
Per month.
$58,000 per at-bat. Now, keep in mind, for him, that's batter-faced.
That's batter-faced.
So that would be different if we're talking about... Right, that's different than talking about Ronald Acuna because he's got at-bats every night. Scherzer, he's going every 5 days. $235,000 per inning pitched.
Mm. Wow.
$5,000 an hour.
An
$82
hour.
Per minute. $82 a minute.
How many?
Max Scherzer.
So what is that a pitch? Like, I mean, what? Obviously, I don't know how many pitches he's going to throw this year.
Yeah. You go 58,000 in at bat. I would say your average at bat would be
like six or seven pitches.
What? Seven, eight. Yeah, I was going to say seven, eight pitches. So
that means about every pitch that he throws is like worth like $6,000.
Goodness gracious.
Am I doing the math right there? Roughly,
your guess is as good as mine.
If it was seven pitches in at bat, that's 82, 85 in at bat. So he's getting he's getting between, let's just say, $7,000 a pitch.
And he stuck us with about a $1,300 bill.
Can you imagine? Like he rears back and throws a pitch. He's like jet ski,
cha-ching.
Yeah. Well, no, that'd be. I mean, water sports are out of control. So that's maybe pitches. Two pitches jet ski.
Exactly. two pitches.
Jet ski.
Yeah.
Three pitches. Rolex. I mean, yeah. He like one
on an intentional walk. On an intentional
Escalade.
On intentional walk. He's literally. There's no telling what he's buying on intentional walk.
God Almighty.
I bet you he's one of those guys.
He gets out of an inning and he's like, private jet to Tahiti.
Oh man. Must be tough.
Think about that.
Tough outing.
Must be tough.
$82 a minute. So what,
like
how much money has to be on the ground for him to justify bending over to pick it up? It's got to be a 20. I mean,
at the bare minimum, at least.
Like, I'm bending over for a downward facing penny.
Facts.
I mean, if it was heads up, I will dive on top of it. But if it's downward facing, all right, I'm probably going to pick it up.
Yeah, just nice little scoop up.
Yeah, a little scoop. And he wouldn't even, even make sense for him to bend over to pick up a 20.
He's like, oh, Francisco, there's a 5. You should pick that up. I'm not wasting my time with it. Hey, Pete, there's a $10 bill. You should get that.
Might need that. Might need that.
Golly.
Unbelievable.
What are we doing?
I mean, that's just, I love seeing those breakdowns like that.
Yeah, I'm glad you do. It makes me sick. Everyone asked me on Twitter a second ago, why are you in such a bad mood? Because I keep thinking about the night that I was with Max Scherzer for about 3 hours. And during those 3 hours, he made $30,000.
And told you that he turned out 75.
Told us he turned out 75 3 for 25 a year. Nope, not can't play under that. Mm-hmm. Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. Too cheap. Yep. Not enough. Mm-hmm. Golly.
Mm. Mm. All right. So, like I said before, pretty cool tweet that just came in the show. Kind of a random sort of college football question for us, which we always love on the show. Connor Hayjack tweets in, who has the most impressive season in football, Utah or Tennessee? And obviously, he's asking us to take strength of schedule into consideration. All right, so we'll dive into it. We'll start with Utah's schedule because we know there is a common opponent on both of these schedules, and that's going to be the Florida Gators. So Utah opens up in Gainesville. They get Southern Utah, San Diego State. They're at Arizona State. They get Oregon State at home, at UCLA, USC. They're at Washington State, Arizona, Stanford, at Oregon, at Colorado to close it out. I think Utah's going to have a pretty good year. I have a lot of confidence in what this team's going to be. I do think that's a tough place and a tough spot to play Florida because a lot of times, even though we'll talk about Greg, oh, it's a new system, oh, it's a new scheme, well, that's also going to make the preparation for it from a Utah perspective a little bit difficult. Like, yeah, they can go watch the Cajuns and dive into that film, but you haven't seen that personnel into what they're going to do. And season opener can always be a little bit different because you had 8 months to prepare. So I do think that's a tough spot. I'll still lean that Utah wins that game. I know they're not going to be able to breathe for large portions of that game, which is understandable going to Gainesville that early in the season. But I think Utah gets that one. I think that, I mean, listen, you could say Oregon State's going to be a tough matchup, but that's, I mean, they play Utah's game. That's going to be a heavyweight title fight. That's a fist fight. That's a bloody back alley matchup, but Utah wants that style game. I do think the USC is going to be tough. I think Chip's dangerous at UCLA because he can always dial it up for one game. We saw it do him a couple of times last year. Go look at what he did to LSU. He had that defense, his head spinning. They had no idea what was coming at him. So it's always going to be dangerous because you're going to get a one-off game a couple times a year from UCLA where the defense just has no idea what's coming because Chip dials it up and it's going to be weird. At Oregon's tough. Tough place to play. I get it. I understand it. But I think Utah's a better football team than Oregon right now. I don't see more than two losses for Utah on this schedule. I don't know where you are on the Utes and how you think that they're going to manage this entire year. We'll start with them as we compare the two. But, I mean, I think a 10-2 season for Utah is – I think that's kind of the floor, really. 9-3, maybe, but that's what I see when I look at Utah versus what their schedule potentially is going to look like this fall.
And that's probably – there are some unknowns with Utah, right? Like, I can understand why people are very bullish. I can understand why people love what they did against Ohio State and with what they found at quarterback and Rising and him really growing into his own last year. It's very difficult for me to think that they take a huge step back, but there are some unknowns. They do lose some key pieces on the defensive side of the football. They do have, I think, a fairly difficult schedule, including the likes of a road trip to Florida in week number one, where, shoot, you could get run out of the gym. I mean, it could happen. I don't think it's likely, but you could get run out of the gym early, and the next thing you know, you're trying to find yourself. So I think Utah is a very dangerous football team and should be excellent. But will they be college football playoff excellent? I don't know. I just don't know. A lot of it hinges on week one. It really does. If they can get a win down there, that's a momentum builder. And it'd be huge for the league. The Pac-12 needs that win so badly. Yeah. So if they can somehow pull that off, that would go a long way in creating the right narrative surrounding the league, knowing that one of their best teams went to a hostile environment in early September and found a way to get the job done.
So, all that being said, we're weighing this against Tennessee and what their season is potentially going to look like. Not just do we think Utah can win the Pac-12 or get to the playoff. Tennessee opens up with Ball State. Then they're at Pitt, which is a very intriguing game because we know just how different Pitt's going to be. You lose a Kenny Pickett to the first round of the NFL draft. You lose a Biletnikoff Award winner to USC. Teams just flat out not going to be the same. Then you get Akron, which Joe Moorhead takes over. It's not a good football team. Don't really know another way to say it. That's all I'm going to say about it. Then Florida, that common opponent. You're at LSU. You get Bama at home the week after you travel to LSU. Tennessee Martin is what it is. Kentucky's at home. That was the track meet of all track meets last year. You're at Georgia. Then you get Missouri the next week. You're at South Carolina and at Vanderbilt to close the season. If we're just going to talk about losable games, there are a lot more, in my opinion, losable games on the schedule for Tennessee. I would go kind of a toss-up with Florida, just because I think all the unknowns with Florida right now of what they will be, what they could be. LSU, I'm just going to say I'll lean LSU in that game right now. And I understand that the secondary looks thin, but I would lean LSU at home in that game. They're not going to beat Alabama. Kentucky's going to be tough. They're not going to win at Georgia. I'll give them Missouri. I think the game at South Carolina is going to be very difficult because that's in Columbia. I might actually lean Gamecocks in that matchup right now. And again, I know that there's parts of the defense that look like they might not match up well against that offense, but at Vanderbilt, I'll give them that game. So if I'm just weighing these two against one another, I almost look at Tennessee's ceiling the way I look at Utah's floor. And then if we just go based on what's in place, the two rosters, the coaching staffs, and the potential of the teams on the schedule, I can't really convince myself in a way, Greg, that Tennessee is going to have a better year than Utah. I can't find a way for like that maze does not have an end that comes out and says, oh, Tennessee puts together more wins than Utah does this upcoming season.
Right. I think Tennessee, it's just so much of it's dependent on
other teams. I agree.
On everybody else. Like when you look at everything, it's hard for me not to envision growth, but it's also hard for me to say it without a shadow of a doubt it's coming. I can't tell you that right now. I just don't know. I feel like we'll know after week one or two. We'll be able to get a pretty good indicator after week two, right? But it's certainly at this point, it's not a foregone conclusion that because you were good last year, you're going to be good again. It just doesn't work that way. I wish it did. Be great. But sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way. You have adversity. You have the expectations and people prepare for you throughout the offseason. Next thing you know, you show up and you're getting different looks from what the team put on tape before because they put a huge emphasis on your game because a big win against you would actually make their program better. Like, it's hard. The air gets real thin up there. And I'm not saying that any of the teams that we've discussed so far today have really experienced that thin air. But when you're doing it for the first time and there's legitimate expectations, it gets a whole heck of a lot more difficult. And it doesn't mean it can't be overcome, but it certainly is tough.
I know how you and I see this. I want to know how Damian sees it on the other side. We'll get to some tweets, maybe a call, 800-239-9569. You want to get in. And I see this very clearly because of my friends at Michelson Laser Vision. You can find them online at michelsonlaservision.com or do what I did over 20 years ago. Call 205-969-8100, set up my free consultation. Dr. Mark Michelson performed my LASIK procedure. I walked out, was back at work in less than a day. Felt like I went from being legally blind to my vision being perfect, and I feel like it's still perfect today. Now, Dr. Jennifer Michelson has joined his practice right there at UAB Highlands, where they offer world-class treatment. National leader in eye surgery for over 3 decades. And there are a variety of easy and affordable payment plans for whatever treatment you choose, including laser eye surgery, lens implants, more. They can treat nearsightedness, farsightedness, astigmatism, cataracts, all right there at Michelson Laser Vision. Call 205-969-8100. You can set up a free consultation. It's easy. Or just visit MichelsonLaserVision.com. Find more information that way. When we come back, wrap up this conversation, Tennessee, Utah. What are your thoughts? Get Damian's thoughts on it. Because you missed a segment on Friday, GMAC, that I was very intrigued with. And it opened my eyes a little bit to Tennessee. And I want to get your sort of thoughts on, because statistics sometimes can be a little bit clouded. But there's a part of this Tennessee team that I think people need to be aware of, and it hasn't been discussed a whole lot. We'll discuss it more next, right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning, 9:49 a.m. It is Monday, June 27th. Just came across this quote from last night, GMAC. Post-game, Clayton Kershaw to Gabe Burns, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Quote, "It was very cool to see Freddie's reception Friday night. He's obviously been a big contributor for our team, and I hope we're not second fiddle. It's a pretty special team over here, too. I think whenever he gets comfortable over here, he'll really enjoy it. It was a good night for him Friday."
What?
Whoa.
Okay. All right.
Interesting.
Sounds like either Freddie needs to buy some flowers for Clayton, or Clayton needs to buy some flowers for Freddie, one or the other, for so everybody can get amalgamated and happy with one another. And, Damien, we know exactly, if that's going to happen, where they need to go to do it.
Absolutely, man. They need to go down to Oxmoor Road in Edgewood down there and talk to my friends from Blakely's Bouquets, man. They got flowers anywhere. Listen, it's summertime. And, fellas, I know it's hot boy summer, but you can still get your girl flowers, big dog. You call my friends at Blakely Bouquets. They can deliver her favorite bouquet the same exact day. Give them a call, 205-579-4900, or order online at blakeleysbouquets.com. Just because, again, that's Blakely's Bouquets, located at Oxmoor, on Oxmoor Road in Edgewood, across from the old and Homewood Antiques building. But remember, if you're not buying your girl flowers, somebody else is.
All right, so we talked about this a little bit on Friday, GMAC. We went through the SEC East defenses. Would they be better or worse? I think we came up with, Damien, did we both say that we thought Tennessee would be just a tad better?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it was based on the numbers. And listen, GMAC, I understand, like, because when you talk about possessions, that's going to be a very different deal for Tennessee's defense. They were 90th in scoring defense last year, 59th in rush defense, which is not terrible, 122nd in pass defense.
It doesn't feel that bad, though.
99th in total defense. It didn't feel that bad. I mean, it maybe, that's what I told Damien Friday, maybe because we thought it was going to be so bad.
Right.
And it wasn't the worst, that it was just okay. But 99th in total defense? Now, I'm not worried about the offense. I mean, you obviously got receiving prowess coming back. Jabari Small's going to be back at tailback. We know Hendon Hooker's fantastic. You're actually pretty solid along the offensive line as far as experience returning. Cedric Tillman's there. So that's going to be fine, but outside of Jeremy Banks at linebacker, maybe Byron Young at defensive end, like, who scares you on that defense? It's not just the numbers for me, it's personnel. I think Matthew Butler is going to be a massive loss for them on defense, a massive loss. Nobody's talking about it. His best D lineman they had last year. So, Theo Jackson's gone, safety. I find it hard to imagine that this defense is going to be, and I understand they're put in different situations, that's not, they don't necessarily play complementary football, and I'm not even sure Josh can do what St. Leach did last year and turn an offense that can go fast into one that goes fast when they want to. It's one of the things that I think makes Kendall really good at Arkansas and everywhere he's been, is that they don't just have to go fast all the time. They can pick and choose when they want to. I don't really view Tennessee's offense that way, and I could give you a couple of games this year where, yeah, the offense is fantastic, but, man, that thing can disappear in a hurry. Look at the bowl game. I mean, it looked like they were going to score 180 points in that game. And then I think they had like four straight three and outs. So just as quick as it can go and look good, that thing can crawl into its shell in a hurry as well. And that Tennessee defense is something that really concerns me this upcoming season.
Well, I think that they're just such a... Their defense is going to have to rely on some turnovers, right? Like, I just don't think down in, down out, they're going to hold up throughout the course of a 12-game season. But if they're opportunistic and they can make some movements, they can get a little pressure up front, find a guy or two in the front that you can really rely on. Maybe there's a guy that's kind of waiting in the wings that's just anxious for his opportunity. Then, hey, it's a different world, man. I mean, I don't think Tennessee, with how they score... I don't think with how they score, you're going to have to worry about winning too many games, because if you can just hold people under 30, you're probably going to be able to get there, right? Like, you don't have to be elite on defense anymore. You don't have to be if your offense can be elite. So I think their offense has a chance to be pretty dang good. Will they be elite? We'll find out. But I feel like Tennessee's defense is not going to be the reason why they win a lot of games. It's going to be because of what they can do on the other side and the pressure they put on you on the other side of the football.
All right, Damien, so I didn't kind of get your thoughts, just Utah versus Tennessee first and foremost. That's what our listener asked. Is there a way you see Tennessee having a better year than Utah does this year?
Yeah, and it could be because I'm an offensive guy, but I just think that now, for Tennessee, they can outrun you in these track meets. That's why I say, outside of Alabama and Georgia, I think that Tennessee beats everybody else. I really do. I just think that even if it becomes a track meet, nobody's defense, I think, scares Tennessee's offense enough, unless it's Georgia and Alabama.
Did you just tell us that Tennessee's going 10-2?
I'm leaning that way.
Take the under.
I'm leaning that way.
You are an offensive guy, because that is an offensive take on your part, is what it is.
I'm telling you, man. I'm sipping that
you're
whatever
not an
color
offensive
to
guy.
Kool-Aid.
You're an offensive guy. That is, I'm offended by that take.
I'm sorry, bro.
Good Lord. We might need to have a whole segment on this tomorrow. Tennessee 10-2. Three-man front coming up next. We're back 7 to 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.